ಪಂಜಾಬಿಹಾರಿ ಗೋಪೀ ಜನ ಬಾಲಭ ಗಿರಿವರ ಧಾರಿ ಗೋಪೀ ಜನ ಬಾಲಭ ಗಿರಿವರ ಯಶೋದಾನಂದನ ಪ್ರಜ ಜನರಂಜನ ಯಶೋದಾನಂದನ ಪ್ರಜ ಜನರಂಜನ ಯಶೋದಾನಂದನ ಪ್ರಜ ಜನರಂಜನ ಯಶೋದನಂದನ ಬ್ರಜ ಜನರಂಜನ ಯಮುನ ತೀರ ವನಚಾರಿ ಯಮುನ ತೀರ ರಾಧಾ ಮಾಧವ ಕುಂಜ ಬಿಹಾರಿ ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ 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 ಹರೇ ಹರೇ ರಾಮ ಹರೆ ರಾಮ 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 ಹರೆ 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 ಕೃಷ್ಣ 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 ಹರೆ 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 ರಾಮ 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 ಹರೆ ಹರೆ ಜಯ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದ ಜಯ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದ ಜಯ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದ ಜಯ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದ ಪ್ರಭು ಜಯ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದ ಜಯ ಶಿವಪ್ರಭುಪಾದ ಜೀ ಜಯ ಜಯ ವಿಷ್ಣುಪಾತ್ ಪರಮಹಂಸಿ ಪರಾಜಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಸ್ಫುಟರ ಶತ ಶ್ರೀ ಸಿಂಹಾಸನ ಭಯ ಚರಣರವಿಂದ ಭಕ್ತಿ ವೇದಾಂತ ಸ್ವಾಮಿ ಜಗದ್ಗುರು ಶಿಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದ ಕೀ ಜಯ ಇಸ್ಕಾನ್ ಬಿವಿಟಿ ಫೌಂಡರ್ ಆಚಾರ್ಯ ಇಸ್ ಡಿವೈನ್ ಗ್ರೇಸ್ ಶಿಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದ ಕೀ ಜಯ ವಿಷ್ಣುಪಾತ್ ಪರಮಹಂಸಿ ಪರಾಜಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಸ್ಫುಟರ ಶತ ಶ್ರೀ ಸಿಂಹಾಸನ ಭಕ್ತಿ ಸಿದ್ಧಾಂತ ಸರಸ್ವತಿ ಗೋಸ್ವಾಮಿ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದ ಕೀ ಅನಂತ ಗುರಿ ವೈಷ್ಣವಿಂದ ಕೀ ಜಯ ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀ ರಾಧಾ ಶ್ಯಾಮಸುಂದರ ಗೋರ್ಣಿತಾ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಬಲರಾಮ ದರ್ಶನಾರ್ಥಿ ಕೀ ಜಯ ಶಿಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದ ಗುರು ಪೂಜಾ ಕೀ ಜಯ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಚರಿತಾಮೃತ ಕ್ಲಾಸ್ ಕೀ ಜಯ ಸಮವೇತ ವೈಷ್ಣವೃಂದ ಕೀ ಜಯ ನಿತಾಯ ಗೌರ ಪ್ರಮಾನಂದೇ ಹರಿ ಹರಿ ಬೋಲ್ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಯಸ್ ಟು ದಿ ಅಸೆಂಬಲ್ ಡಿವೋಟೀಸ್ ಹರಿ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಯಸ್ ಟು ದಿ ಅಸೆಂಬಲ್ ಡಿವೋಟೀಸ್ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಯಸ್ ಟು ದಿ ಅಸೆಂಬಲ್ ಡಿವೋಟೀಸ್ ಹರಿ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಯಸ್ ಟು ಶ್ರೀ ಗುರು ಅಂಡ್ ಗೌರ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಯಸ್ ಟು ಶ್ರೀ ಗುರು
Başına da ikisini sıkıdır. Yesin atıratı ve dağın tasan. Namaste. I have to
excuse me this morning. I got something in my chest. I picked up from all the karma of being in a mediation all day yesterday or something. And so if my voice gives out a little bit, you have to bear with me. Do you chant that one first or the last one?
The last one is the prophets. So
okay.
Okay. You want me to read the sloka quickly and then you can just pick up the last one?
Yeah, that's okay.
We can recite the 5-6 sloka together and then the last one will do with the response. Gaurabanga utkala dakhin dese giya lokera nistara kaila apana bhramiya. You want to do the translation or you read the translation later?
The translation, okay. In this way, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally toured Bengal, East Bengal, Orissa, and the southern countries, and he delivered all kinds of people by spreading Krishna consciousness.
Mathura jai bar chale asena jari khanda billa pray lok taha parama pasanda.
When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to Jarikhanda on his way to Mathura, he found that the people there were almost uncivilized and were devoid of God consciousness.
Purport? There's a short purport. You don't?
I don't have that purport.
Okay, we can read together. The word villa refers to a class of men belonging to the villas. Bills. The bills are like black Africans and they are lower than Sudras. Such people generally live in the jungle and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had to meet them. Wow, what a good fortune. Nama prema diya kaila sabar nistar chaitanner gura lila bhujite shaktikar.
Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave even the beals an opportunity to chant the holy name and come to the platform of his static love. Thus he delivered all of them. Who has the power to understand the transcendental pastimes of glory? I don't have that purport either, so maybe you could read that. And
oh, this purport. Together. As evidence of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy, we are experiencing that the people of Africa are taking to Krishna consciousness, chanting and dancing and taking prasadam like other Vaishnavas. This is all due to the power of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Who can understand all over the world? Thank you. Bana dekhi bhrama hai ei Vrindavan, Saila dekhi mane hai ei Govardhan.
When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu passed through the Jarikhanda forest, he took it for granted that it was Vrindavan. When he passed over the hills, he took it for granted that they were Govardhan.
Jaha nadi dekhe taha manaye kalindi mahaprema vese nache prabhu pare kandi.
Similarly, whenever Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw a river, he immediately accepted it as the river Jamuna. Thus, while in the forest, he was filled with great ecstatic love, and he danced and fell down crying.
Pathe jaite bhattacharya saka mula phal jaha se payen taha layena sakal.
Along the way, Balabhadra Bhattacharya collected all kinds of spinach, roots, and fruit wherever possible.
Je grame rahen prabhu tathai brahman Pacho sata jani ase kareni mantran.
Whenever Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu visited a village, a few brahmanas, five or seven, would come and extend invitations to the Lord.
केह अन्न आनी दे भट्टाचार्य स्थाने केह दुग्ध दधि केह घृत खंड आने.
Some people would bring grain and deliver it to Balabhadracharya. Others would bring milk and yogurt. And still others would bring ghee and sherbet.
This we can do response or even to...
जहाँ
विप्र नाही तहाँ शूद्र महाजन आशीषा बे भट्टाचार्य करे निमंत्रण.
यहाँ wherever विप्र ब्राह्मण
नाही
There is not.
Tahan.
There.
Shudra Mahajana.
Devotees born in families other than Brahmana. Hashi. Coming. Sabhe.
All of them.
Bhattacharya.
To
Balabhadra
Bhattacharya.
Kare Nimantana. Make invitation. Translation. In some villages there were no brahmanas. Nonetheless, devotees born in non-brahmana families came and extended invitations to Balabhadra Bhattacharya. Actually, a sannyasi or a brahmana will not accept an invitation extended by a person born in a lower family. However, there are many devotees who were raised to the platform of brahmana by their initiation. These are called Shudra Mahajana. This indicates that one who is born in a non-brahmana family has accepted the brahmana status by initiation. Such devotees extended invitations to Balabhadra Bhattacharya. A Mayavadi sannyasi will accept an invitation only from a brahmana family. But a Vaishnava does not accept an invitation from a brahmana if he does not belong to the Vaishnava sect. However, a Vaishnava will accept an invitation from a brahmana or Sudra Mahajana if that person is an initiated Vaishnava. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself accepted invitations from Sudra Mahajanas. Mm-hmm. And this confirms the fact that anyone initiated by a Vaishnava mantra can be accepted as a brahmana. One can accept an invitation from such a person.
I think the Om
Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. That's a symptom of old age, is forgetfulness. It's the advanced stage of Maya, because we come to the material world to begin with because we're forgetful of our relationship with Krishna. But when you get old, like myself, then you forget everything.
They complain that they don't hear
Okay.
louder.
Yeah, sorry. And then you really know you're old when you forget what you forgot. Which happens to me two or three times a day. But anyway, these series of verses are kind of like, the way they're juxtaposed with one another is kind of like encapsulates the essence of the Hare Krishna movement. Lord Chaitanya, he's traveling through the Jarikanda forest, and obviously he's in the mood of ecstasy, of love for Radha Krishna. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Radha Krishna Nahe Anya is like the essence that Lord Chaitanya, he has come in the mood of Radharani. So Lord Chaitanya, many examples throughout the Chaitanya Charitamrita where he was, we know all the stories where he'd fall down in ecstasy and he'd fall in the river and they didn't know where he was and they'd have to go send out search parties because he was continuously lapsing into these states of pure love of God, ecstasy of love for Radha Krishna. So Lord Chaitanya is going through the Charikanda forest, and he's in this mood. He's flowing down. He's seeing Govardhan Hill, the Jamuna River. But along the way, he's running into these different personalities or these different kinds of people. And even though he is the personification of Radha Krishna or the embodiment of Radha Krishna, even though he himself is in this ecstatic mood of love of God 24 hours a day, but he still acknowledged these people that were coming to him, and it gave them his association and met with them. But the other people, like the caste Goswamis or the Brahmanas and so forth, who were very, very fixed up in the Vedic rituals, but they did not understand Krishna. They did not understand Lord Chaitanya. So him, those people, Lord Chaitanya would not deal with. But the simple people who were pure-hearted in their desire to get the association of Lord Chaitanya, Lord Chaitanya would accept them, Lord Chaitanya would greet them, and Lord Chaitanya would initiate them into the Vaishnava mantra. Now, of course, this is this is very reminiscent of what Prabhupada did. I mean, this is very, very analogous that Srila Prabhupada, we know that he was in a platform of ecstatic love of Krishna all the time. His preparation for coming to America was residing in the Radha Damodar temple in Vrindavan and translating the Bhagavatams to bring with him. And he was in this mood of always seeing Krishna wherever he went. When he wrote his poem, coming over on the Jaladuta.
I cannot put this here, but nobody can hear online.
Well, they're being spared.
Maybe you can just...
if he gets it too much, can you raise your mouth? Can they hear?
No, too many texts are coming in. They're not talking. It doesn't go there.
Oh, it doesn't.
I can hold it for you.
Oh, no. Not that old. maybe soon, but not quite yet. Okay. So anyway, when Prabhupada came, he wrote this poem, and to summarize, he said, "Why are you sending me here? What am I going to do here? Look at all these people. This civilization, this country, is covered by the modes of ignorance." Practically not even passion, but mostly ignorance. So Srila Prabhupada had to, these are the people that came when he arrived. These are the people that he met, and these are the people that he actually were receptive to Krishna consciousness, receptive to his message. Even though Srila Prabhupada himself was in the mood of Vrindavan, and we know that, but nonetheless, he was extending his mercy. Actually, he was extending the mercy of Lord Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya and Srila Bhakti Siddhanta. there's a letter to, kind of a well-known person that's now sannyas in 1971. I could mention his name, but I won't. he was worshiping Lord Nityananda. And so he wrote a letter to Prabhupada and said, "I'm worshiping Lord Nityananda, is that okay?" And Prabhupada said, "What is this Nityanandaite?" He said, "We are not Nityanandaites, we are not sectarian." And then he very nicely explained to him that you have to worship everybody. It's a total package that Lord Nityananda, of course, he's Lord Balaram, and then Lord Chaitanya, he's Radha Krishna. But in order to get the mercy of Radha Krishna, you need the mercy of, Prabhupada was saying, the six Goswamis. You have to follow in the footsteps of the six Goswamis. And then in order to get the mercy of the six Goswamis, he was explaining, you need to get the mercy of my spiritual master, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, who is, he said, is non-different than Lord Nityananda. And then, of course, in our situation, we need the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. Without Prabhupada's causeless mercy, none of us would be here. It would not happen. Because in India, nobody wanted anything to do with Prabhupada. This was some kind of remote bhakti cult out in West Bengal. Lord Chaitanya, of course, was known in some parts of India, but in some other part, most parts of India, they never knew who Lord Chaitanya was. They probably referred to it as the Chaitanya cult. And like the Brahmins and all the caste people that were attached to these designations by birth, they didn't want anything to do with this guy. They didn't want anything to do, I say, with Prabhupada and with the devotees. Until Prabhupada came here and he made devotees, he attracted many, many young people to Krishna consciousness movement, and then he brought them back to India. Because we all know that America, it's a very nasty place, as Prabhupada pointed out, in the modes of passion and ignorance, which is giving them more credit than they deserve. For example, I hate to bring this up, but you know, there's a big athletic event coming up next week. You all don't know about this because nobody reads newspapers or follows the news or TV. I can't help but say this. I remember in the old days, Prabhupada said, we don't read newspapers, we don't do any of this thing. And you go on a japa walk in the morning, you'd see two or three brahmacharis gathered around a news rack, trying, you know, manipulating their heads so they could read the headlines in the newspaper. Because they wouldn't buy one and read it, but they were trying to read it through the news rack. But nonetheless, there is an event coming up in a week, and you'll probably see that the Sunday feast is markedly lower attendance. Actually graduated from law school on the day of this event, the Super Bowl, of course, which has become a religious holiday in this country. I mean, seriously, football is a religious, in the South especially, football is a cult. It's a religion. They have all these rituals that they go through. And they're so rabid and passionate that they're maniacal about it. I'm not exaggerating this. This is true. Like, this Super Bowl that's coming up will get the biggest television ratings of any program of the year. Like, 100 million people watch this game. Over 100 million people all over the world. But there's some other statistics that I was thinking about. And last time I gave class, I kind of mentioned this a little bit. Do you know how many animals are going to be slaughtered to celebrate this event? You know how many chicken wings they're going to eat? No, that's the big thing. That is it, part of the ritual. Just like, you know, in Judaism, there's different holidays like Passover or Rosh Hashanah. Especially Passover, you eat all these special foods that symbolize the passage of the Jews from slavery in Egypt, and the matzah means this, and the horseradish means that, you know, and the salt, the bitter herbs, and so forth. So they mean something. Well, these things, this is modern religion. This is modern religion, that these animal slaughter is part of their ritual. This is how they celebrate these big holidays. Thanksgiving, what do we think about in Thanksgiving? Hundreds of millions of turkeys are slaughtered for Thanksgiving. Hundreds of millions. And then if, I don't want to get into gory details, but if you imagine if they're cutting up these chickens and eating only certain parts of them, how many chickens are going to die so they can have this ritual while they're watching this big sporting event devour all this horrible stuff? And Christmas is the same thing. All the pigs get it during Christmas on the ham. So they celebrate these holidays by observing these rituals of dinner and tailgating and all of these other things, but the central point of their celebration is just killing animals. And that's what it's all about. And you see all the advertising. You won't, but I will. I see the advertising on TV. You know, I have a professional justification for watching the news that you don't have. I only have that. Because I have to be aware of what's going on for in case some important court decision comes out. I have to know about it right away. But you don't need to know that, so you don't have to watch that stuff. And I know I'm the only one here that does that. But nonetheless, all the advertising is two things. There's all the animals that are going to be eaten, slaughtered and eaten, and then there's the liquor, alcohol. That's how they celebrate. Mostly beer and some kind of meat product. And actually, there's a devotee here. I can't pronounce her name. I can't remember her name. Chitra Lakata or something? She's really, she's been up at that slaughterhouse up in North Carolina with some other protesters. Yes, that's it. Champa, yes, that's her. She's, yes, and I was like corresponding with her because they got arrested and everything, or they were threatened with arrest. But anyway, the conditions, it's like from morning to night, just truck after truck after truck, nonstop, bumper to bumper, just pulls into these slaughterhouses and annihilates these animals. And then they package it up and make it look palatable, make it look appealing, and they put advertising on TV to brainwash the people into eating these things. So this is the country that Prabhupada came to. What to speak of these other animals, all the cows that are slaughtered. And if you, in Prabhupada talks about this a lot in the first canto and the fourth canto about animal slaughter and cow slaughter, which I mentioned last time when I gave class. But he wouldn't even talk about some aspects of that. He couldn't do it. It was so painful. And he always emphasized the systematic slaughter, like opening up these slaughterhouses where literally billions of animals are brutally murdered every year. And Prabhupada said that, you know, if they do not stop this, if they don't stop this, then there will be a catastrophic reaction. I'm not sure if I mentioned this last time, but I repeat myself in that. I plead old age again. Bear with me. And when I can't remember what I said before, then, you know, I'm really in trouble. But if I think I said something before, then I'm not quite there yet. But Prabhupada says there will be a catastrophic reaction for the butcher, his land, and his government. Yeah. Catastrophic reaction. What's that?
It's happening.
No, it is happening, absolutely. Yes, absolutely. This global warming and climate change are directly attributed to these factory farms where animals are systematically slaughtered to feed and the government leaders. Now, what infuriated me about some of the candidates, again, that's something that you won't know, but I can relate it to you as like an intermediary. Everybody's talking about climate change, global warming, and in like 20, 25 years, the scientists have said the planet is gonna heat up to a certain degrees, and then everything's gonna melt, and the heat is going to be unbearable, and the planet will become uninhabitable. Like, in 20, 30 years, this planet will be uninhabitable. And that's scientific preaching. I mean, scientific predictions. So I'm just bringing this up to try to see what Prabhupada saw. Just to get a glimpse. Of course, we can't see what Prabhupada saw, but to just get a glimpse that this kind, gentle, elderly man on the outside. Inside, of course, he was, you know, ever youthful. Came to this country where these practices at that time, even back then, these practices were unheard of in India. I mean, as bad as India was, it still hadn't reached the level of the Western countries. So Prabhupada's strategy was, if he could convert us, if he can convert Westerners, Americans, and show the Indians, this is what you want. You want all this technology. You want all this material advancement. These are the things that you're, you know, striving for. And the Indians are extremely passionate about this. I mean, I don't mean this in a negative way, but if you look at they have the National Spelling Bee every year. And I think the top five people, three of the five winners are Indians. They're very smart. Silicon Valley is founded. There's some IT, Intel and another big company were founded by Indians. They're very smart. It's not like they don't have the intellectual or the brain power to understand Krishna consciousness. It's just that the culture, they have put all of their emphasis in emulating the Western countries, especially America. Prabhupada said many times that America, whatever America does, the rest of the world will follow. And that's why Prabhupada came here. I was talking to Balavanta, and he was mentioning to me the last year in Mayapur of 1977, the last time Prabhupada was lecturing there, he actually, in the middle of his lecture, he stopped and he said, "This is for the American boys and girls," what I'm going to say, "is for the American boys and girls, especially." Said, "The rest of you should listen, but this is especially for the Western boys and girls." Because he knew this, whatever we are able to do in America will have a huge impact, not only in India, but the entire world. Because everybody is imitating America.
It's a shame.
Gargamuni mentioned something to me a few years ago when I was visiting him in India. He said, you know, there were so many foreign invaders that came to India. The Mughals, Persians, Alexander the Great. There were so many foreign invaders. And many of them actually took over, the Muslims in particular took over many, many parts of India. And that's why many of the Sikh Goswamis, Sanatan and Rupa, they were considered to be, by the Brahmanas, untouchables. Because even though they were born in Brahmana families, they were working for the they were Kayistas, I think is the word for it. And they were working, what's that?
Kayasta,
yeah, thank you. Kayasta, yes, thank you. Kayasta, everybody out there. It's not Kayista. I keep thinking Kanista Adhikari or something like that. But anyway, they were born in high families, but they were, you know, because they had no choice at that time, really. They had to work for the Muslim government leader. They were very, very good. They were very, very proficient, and the Muslim king loved them. He was so attached to them because they were so expert. And so if Prabhupada had followed all the strict rules and regulations of caste system in India, they would have not been qualified to become members, acharyas in the Krishna consciousness religion, followers of Lord Chaitanya. And of course there's Haridas Thakur, who couldn't even get into the temple in Jagannath Puri because he was a Muslim. So this bodily consciousness, Prabhupada had to deal with all this bodily consciousness. And that's actually, you know, they have this India-Pakistan problem. And most of that problem was created by the Brahmins in India because they're very puffed up and they're very rigid. And if you're not born in a certain family, if you're not born into a certain caste, then you are stuck for the rest of your life. And then they would treat, not only on top of that, they would treat the Sudras and others very, very unfairly. And and subject them to all kinds of abuse and discrimination. So the Muslims came in, and one of their tactics is, gun to your head, you know, accept Muhammad, renounce your religion, or I'm going to chop off your head. That's the end of it. So the lower caste in India, they were thinking, well, why should we give up our heads for these brahmanas that treat us like dirt? So they just converted. And millions of Hindus, or whatever they were, became Muslims because of this caste system. And therefore, even on the same caste system, we would not ever be qualified. I mean, Prabhupada made these young American sannyasis. He accepted women as his disciples. And these things were just like, I don't know, I shouldn't say were, in many parts of India they still are, but these things were very controversial. They were unacceptable because it's all based on the bodily consciousness of life. They wanted to preserve, they're at the top of the food chain, the Brahmins, and if you're not born in a family, then you can't get any of these privileges that go along with that. And therefore, they treated everybody else like such dogs, literally, that they said, well, I'm not gonna give up my head for these guys. What are they giving me? They're just treating me like dirt. So millions and millions became Muslims because of the way they were treated. And of course, we know Krishna consciousness is real, Varnashram, and it's based on qualification. But Prabhupada came here, and we were as low as you can possibly be. I mean, we're the lowest of the low. And not only were many of us, hippies, and they took sense gratification. All that meant was they just took sense gratification to a new level. Whereas when I grew up, a long time ago, before TV was even invented, so I have these vague recollections, but I remember a husband and wife could not even be depicted in the same bed. They had to be, and they wore these big pajamas from head to toe, you know, and you couldn't even do that. And you couldn't even cuss, even any kind of cuss words. You couldn't even say, damn. Well, Prabhupada said it, so I'm repeating, you know, he said that word a lot. But you couldn't say anything. It was so strict. And the hippies, what the hippie movement really was a revolt against the rigidity of that middle class, puritanical lifestyle, where the illicit sex was at least somewhat controlled. I mean, when I was in school, if a girl or a guy was having sex, it was like a scandal. It was a scandal. Oh, God. If they're having sex, it's a scandal. Now at 14 years old, 13 years old, they're looking at porn on the internet. They're sending all these pictures back and forth on their so-called smartphones. How smart is it when you send these pictures and somebody hacks you, or the guy you thought was your boyfriend sends these pictures around to the whole school? That's real smart. That's a good smartphone. You know, but that's, so the hippies, they're the ones, and many of you are responsible that are in this room today. You guys were part of the ringleaders for all that. I wasn't, but you were. And that's what it meant. It just meant free sex. It meant unrestricted free sex and drugs and everything else that went along with it. So, you know, and of course, what really revolutionized that was the birth control pill. When that pill came out, everything changed dramatically. So that's what the hippies did. They ushered in a new level. And of course, there was a lot of discontent. Like me, I was one of the political people that hated the establishment. I hated the politicians. I hated the government. What brought me to Krishna consciousness originally was I was really angry about death, and I could never understand, even as a small kid, why are we here if we just have to die? Everyone around us, all the people we love, all the people we care about, they're all going to die. And I just couldn't understand who was responsible for this. Who had created this cruel hoax that you will be allured by some material sense gratification? Oh, go to college, get a good job, make some money, buy a nice house, get a car. You know, what is that Beatles song? Oh, no, the Rolling Stones, Can't Get No Satisfaction, you know? That was essentially, you know, on the radio, listening to radio, listening to all this music, all the things on TV. I remember the remote control was like a revolutionary invention. And yet, that's what happened, where there was a big revolt against all that. There was some legitimate revolt and some legitimate grievances because the government was so corrupt that there was some legitimate animosity and rebellion against the government. But really what it actually meant, what was really the basis of it all, was all illicit sex, free love, you know, free drugs, all the drugs you want. And that's why when the Vietnam War, nobody wanted to go to Vietnam because they would have to give up all their sense gratification. You know, forget whether it was a justified war or not justified. Most people didn't want to go there because they were having a great time. They were taking a few credits at college, and their parents were giving them the money for tuition, and they had money for dope, and they had lots of sex, and it was a great life. So when Prabhupada came here in 1965, 66, by 68, this whole thing was just like out of control. It was just exploding. But the same people that were unhappy with the system or the government or the country the way it was before, they also saw through all the hippie movement that, no, this is not going to bring happiness. Because even you get, you know, your material comforts, even you get a car and a nice home, house and all these things, still there's nothing you can do about it. Birth, death, disease, and old age. Everyone's going to get old. Everyone's going to get sick. Everybody's going to die. And we have to leave all this behind. And the more we accumulate, the harder it is to leave it all behind. So this is the environment that Prabhupada came to. And yes, it was, you know, some people say, well, you know, Prabhupada was so successful because the circumstances, the historical period was perfectly aligned with Prabhupada's mission. But who's in charge of time? Who's in charge of history? Who's in charge of all these? You think it's happening by chance? Oh, it's just an accident that Prabhupada came here in the middle of the hippie revolution, when there were so many unhappy people that were rebelling against the system. Oh no, that was just an accident? No, of course not. Why did Prabhupada spend the time that he did in Vrindavan preparing to come here? Because he was directly under Krishna's control. He was directly under Lord Chaitanya's control. And it's interesting because anytime a reporter would ask Prabhupada, I may have mentioned this too, but some things are worth repeating, and some people may have not heard it. But a reporter would ask Prabhupada, why have you come here? We have our own religion. We have our own culture. We go to church. We go to the synagogue, we go to the mosque. Have you come here because our religions are, you want to convert people to your religion? And Prabhupada would never take the bait. He would never get into a provocative discussion, my religion's better than your religion. He would say two things. First of all, I am here because this is what my spiritual master instructed me to do. And if you look historically, if you Google or whatever, you'll see how many times Prabhupada asked that question. This is what my spiritual master, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, told me to do. That's why I'm here. And you have your religion, that's okay. Just stop killing. As you do, a Krishna would challenge him. Okay, Christ said, thou shalt not kill. Don't kill. That's okay. You want to chant the names of Jesus? You want to be a Christian? You want to be this? You want to be that? Stop killing. He hammered them on this point. Of course, they had all these rationalizations. Oh, it's murder. It's not this. You know, it means murder. It only means humans. You know, but Prabhupada would never let them off the hook. So he came into this. He came into this environment at the perfect time, and that was Krishna's arrangement. And we can see here, this was the model. This was the example that was established by Lord Chaitanya himself. He's going through the forest. The brahmanas don't want anything to do with him. The Mayavadis don't want anything to do with him. All these uninitiated people are the ones that are approaching him, and he's accepting them, and he's initiating them into the mantra initiation and giving them this wonderful gift. And at the letter, at the end of the letter, when Prabhupada explained about Lord Chaitanya, said, if you please Gaura Nitai, of course, you're automatically pleasing Radha Krishna. Because that is Radha Krishna and Lord Balaram. So he's explaining that. And then he gave the practical instructions. He said, so go on, go out on Hari Nama chant. That's a specific instruction. Go out and chant in the streets, distribute my books, study my books, follow the regulative principles. And then this person happened to be in San Francisco, which may tip off some of you who this mystery person is. In your case, do Ratha Yatra very gorgeously every year. That was his specific instructions. That is how we serve Prabhupada. That is how we serve Srila Bhakti Siddhanta. That is how we serve the Six Goswami. And that is how we serve Gaura Nitai. This is a Sankirtan movement. We're here. This is I don't want to say this, but really, we're here. Gaura Nitai are our inspiration. And I don't say this because I'm biased, although I am. But that's our inspiration. That's the foundation of our movement. Yeah, Lord Chaitanya visited some temples from time to time and was an ecstatic love of God when he saw the deities and so forth. But he was always out spreading Krishna consciousness. That was his mission. Spread Krishna consciousness wherever he went. So when Prabhupada in Mayapur in 1977, he gave us Americans, and by extrapolation, everyone else, a special mission. Spread Krishna consciousness. That instruction is eternal. There's no reason why, oh, I'm old now, I'm going to retire. I'm just going to go play shuffleboard and drive around in my Ford or Chevy or something to the grocery store. No, Prabhupada, did he retire? He was preaching and serving, doing service right up into the very last instant that he left this world. He was still translating up until the very last minute. He was still giving instructions to people like Sri Dhammadhar Maharaj, you know, about the Bhaktivedanta Institute and preaching Life Comes From Life. Prabhupada was instructing us. And then I remember, and I'll end on this, when I was doing some research, and I mentioned this before many times, but I was doing some research on the history of the BBT, so I was going back into, you know, as many room conversations and letters and lectures and things of that sort, and I came across this one incident where Prabhupada was in, you know, he was nearing his departure, and some senior, I don't think he used that word, senior devotees, that's a misnomer. Some devotees that had been around for a long time, older devotees that had joined early, they were talking, Prabhupada, please don't go. What will we do without you? Please stay. Please, we need you. And Prabhupada said, what is there that I have not given you? I have given you everything. You have everything. And they couldn't answer. These were older devotees, you know, very intelligent devotees. They couldn't answer. Because Prabhupada did give us everything. He gave us everything that we need. We still have it. His instructions are eternal. So, the older I get, and for some reason I'm hung up on that today, I guess, when there's more behind you than there is ahead of you. I have two kinds of old age. I can tell. The devotees that use one hand to get up off the floor, and the devotees have to use two hands to get up off the floor. Then we know what stage you're at. Yes, Prabhupada up until the very end, his body, no matter what the condition, was never an impediment. He overcame so many heart problems and diabetes and everything else. He had so many serious illnesses, and yet up until the very last, and he extended his causeless mercy to us. Sure, there's going to be a few casualties. Some people are going to leave. That's to be expected. That doesn't mean that there's some defect in the religion. That just means that some people have their free will and they come for a while, they do some service, and whatever you could do, Prabhupada would accept. He remembered always what we had done for him, not what we had not done for him. He always posited, you know, with devotee would leave and come back, and Prabhupada would just welcome them, you know, with warmth and kindness. And I won't tell that story now, but anyway, because it's almost 9 o'clock and I know you guys have to go fulfill Prabhupada's instructions somewhere on Harinam or whatever. So, thank you. Yes?
How old are you?
Me? Next question. All right. Well, I guess there will be some people, but you have to remember they're gonna be having their parties ahead of time when they have their ritualistic food and drink and so forth. So they're gonna be celebrating all day. Yes.
Can you give it a start? When did you join? How did you join?
Well, that's kind of pretty well known by people that have been around for 40. It's well known. I joined over on campus at the University of Florida.
Oh,
wow. Yeah, in 1970. Myself, a group of us were all students here. Myself, Gayatri, Pushtakrishna, Dharmadas. And we're all going to school there. And Gargamuni came, and he sat down on the plaza, following Prabhupada's formula. He chanted, he gave us some fruit prasadam, and then within weeks, we had 100 people a day coming to Krishna House, which was, at that time, just 2 blocks, I have no sense of direction, I think it's north of the stadium on the other side of University Avenue. We had people coming for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And the thing I didn't finish is that in my situation, I was so angry, I was taking these things to get me, because when I found God, I was going to protest. I was going to chastise God. Why have you done this? What is going on here? This is cruel, unusual punishment. I was furious, full of anger, and it got me into a lot of trouble with the cops and things like that, and so forth and so on. But by the time that Gargamuni got here, I knew that there was an alternative to some material solution to all these problems. So when he came, the philosophy just clicked immediately. The one thing I remember vividly, he says, there are some, he preached by the graduate library on campus in the plaza. He said, in this library, there are millions and millions and millions of books. But where is that one book that describes what is the soul? Where is that one book? What is the soul that can tell you what is the soul? What is the purpose of life? What is God? What is our relationship? And I said, well, this is it. This is the guy I've been looking for. And fortunately, I checked my anger at the door. ate a lot of Simply Wonderfuls to mellow out, my version of mellow out back in those days, and the rest is history.
Was thinking of another angle of vision, and in one sense, you know, the hippies, they were so fallen, but in another sense, like Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said to Prabhupada, go to the West because they're ready for it. So it's kind of like, you know, there's religion, and then there's economic development, there's sense gratification, so, you know, the hippies had been through a lot of that, and it just nothing there,
right.
You know, so it's kind of glorious in one sense,
oh,
you know. That,
it's glorious in every sense.
Okay. Yeah, they're burned out, and they were looking for the truth. They're looking for something new.
We have to go through, exhaust all of these materials. For us, not using our intelligence, at least in my case, I couldn't use my brain. The intelligent person understands like hearing. So you know, I had to try everything, and when I tried everything, it's all, well, this is not working. This is getting me nowhere. This is the same old thing, a dead end. I'm not happy. So once we exhausted all of that, we were ready to go. Okay, thank you.